the problem is, and if you can slack somebody on a Friday night or Saturday night and say, don't look at this until Monday. Well, guess what? They're already looking at it and they're thinking about it all goddamn weekend until Monday. So, right? It's like saying like, hey, do you have 15 minutes? People are like, oh my God, what is this call going to be about? Yeah. Until that 15 minutes happens, people are like deer in headlights.
Welcome to Under Embargo, the podcast that says the quiet part out loud about PR, communications, and the chaos in between. Hosted by two of LinkedIn's most connected comms pros, Becca Chambers, a no BS corporate comms exec with raging ADHD, and Parry Hedrick, founder of tech PR firm Crackle PR. This show brings it all. Real talk, sharp insights, and the kind of industry truths they don't put in press releases. No fluff, no filters, no f***s given. This is Under Embargo. Let's get into it.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Under Embargo podcast. I am one half of your hosting team, Parry Hedrick, Crackle founder. Obviously, you guys know Becca Chambers. She is the other half that will be speaking momentarily. But today, we are super excited to announce a guest who's pretty heavy hitting in the world of comms. Her lineup of career stops looks like a murderer's row of comms expertise. Her name is Gab Faree. And she is got some news that she's going to talk about today. But she also, before we get to that point, has just finished a stint, quite a stint at Bumble. She was VP of Global Communications, which is no job for the faint-hearted. Prior to that, she was at Slack. She was Senior Director of Corporate, Internal, and Executive Comms, another huge, huge role. And then the list goes on and on. She was at Salesforce in a comms capacity too. So we're really excited to have you here today. There's a lot we can talk about.
Thanks so much, Parry and Becca. I'm really happy to be on after listening over the last couple of weeks since you've all launched. So thanks for doing this. This is so exciting that the comms industry just has, I feel like, so much like investment and oxygen and cool initiatives that are happening that like our marketing friends, no offense, Becca, I know you're a comms girly at heart, but our marketing friends have had forever. And now we're getting it in comms too. So thank you for doing this. I'm so excited to be here.
Of course. And you said that so well. And it reminds me of one of the things that I say on LinkedIn all the time. I was kind of one of the early folks on LinkedIn. And I would always say, you know, we're so great at elevating everyone else, but we really suck at doing it for ourselves. And it's so nice to see that there's a little bit of a movement afoot here where people are realizing that if we don't do it for ourselves, who the hell is going to? So here we are.
And it's our responsibility, right? Like, as people who have a platform and are the executives in this industry, Gab, you too. Like, it is our responsibility to share the wins of our team and what we're doing, because otherwise nobody's going to know about it.
Absolutely. We're no longer being the cobbler's children.
That's right.
Correct. So it's kind of a nice segue. I kind of want to get right to the news piece of what we're talking about here today, because you have some pretty interesting news. And I haven't seen a lot of people do a foray into the area you're doing it in. So do you want to talk about the new community that you're building for comms professionals and kind of give us the genesis of what happened with that, how we got here and where you're at?
Yeah, absolutely, Parry. And thanks so much for allowing me the chance to talk about it, because it is something I'm truly excited about. I have been working in comms for the last 15 years in a variety of roles, from startups to big companies like Salesforce and Bumble that you've mentioned. And I'm recently in a position where I just had a moment to just like take a sit and be like, what do I like the most about what I do? And what are the parts that I am like uniquely really good at? Like, I think media relations is great. I like media relations, like writing, cool. I like doing that. But what I love to do is like manage my teams and help them be better at comms and help them be like, hey, guess what? You can have balance. Like, you can go to your Wednesday night bowling league every single week. You do not need to log on at 8 p.m. every single night, and I'm still going to get you a path to promoted. Like, here are ways that you can be more productive without just grinding out those hours. And seeing all these individuals that I've worked with over the last 15 years grow in their career, grow in their titles, grow in their autonomy, grow in the trust that they've earned with their executives, like, that has been my sweet spot and the part that I've loved the most. And I was like, how can I do that at scale? Because it's great to have impact on the couple of people that I have on my team, but there are so, so, so many people that either have a manager who is too busy or too senior, or maybe even too checked out to grow them. And I know that because I have been that manager where I'm like, oh, I wish I could spend more time with you. But like, I have so many things going on, I just can't do it. So I've launched Off the Record. It's a community for comms professionals. to provide coaching. So we're going to do monthly workshops, masterclasses, so you can learn the latest of what's going on in our industry. We're going to do one-to-many coaching, which I'm calling office hours. So you can bring a problem, a pitch, a plan, whatever it is you're working on. Maybe you're debating changing jobs. Maybe you're having a hard time getting things approved internally, whatever it is. And we can talk about it live. We're going to have a template library so people, you know, don't have to start from scratch with building a pitch or, you know, responding to a crisis or whatever it is they're working on, building an all hands for internal comms folks, and a lot of other elements of it. So I'm really excited for Off the Record. We're going to open it in cohorts. So the first cohort's opening in the middle of June. I think by the time this comes out, it could possibly open or close. If you're hearing it and you want to join, email me at gab@joinofftherecord.com. I will let you in. But yeah, we're really excited about it. And the response has been amazing. A lot of people who, you know, I was thinking about as like the ideal comms person who I was building this for have reached out to me and been like, I need this. I'm lonely. I'm working from home. I don't have the swivel chair moments. I'm unable to sit in my SVP's office and learn from them. Like, I'm not overhearing phone calls of people anymore like I used to, or I never got that because I'm 25 and I joined the workforce in the middle of COVID and I've never had coworkers. So I'm really excited to bring this cohort of, you know, rising, energetic, you know, leaders or, you know, soon to be leaders in communications across their career spectrum, across agency, in-house consulting, whatever it is, and really to be that, like, I think my LinkedIn is like your comms BFF. So like, just to really be that friend in the office that everyone needs and no one really has anymore. And, you know, just be that for them.
I gotta say, first of all, love the messaging. I would expect nothing less from somebody of your comms caliber, but really, like, I'm listening to it and I'm like, accurate, dead on, right? You nailed all of the pain points. It's perfect. So just from somebody who is your demographic, love it. The point about post-COVID not having the swivel chair moments is the thing. And I talk about it and I love the phrase swivel chair moments, by the way. I don't think I've ever heard somebody say that before. I used to just talk like you don't hear the hallway chatter. You don't, like, by osmosis, you don't get the info. And as a communications person, like, that is so, so important, right? To just be kind of hearing and being around the other people and getting to know people and getting to, like, I don't know, just all the little nuggets. So I think what you are offering is something that I'm not even sure some people realize that they don't have, you know, like they might realize that they need a coach or that they need more help, but I think people don't even realize how much they're missing from those little moments. So I love this offering and yay.
Thank you, Becca. That means so much. And like, to your point, like that's why like the office hours or the coaching, I want to open it up to everyone. So even if you don't have a question to bring in that month or week or whatever we do, like you got to listen to other people because you learn so much from that. And to your point, like I was super lucky. My very first agency job I had, and this is something I want to talk about with the cohort of people who join Off the Record or whomever will listen to me, is like, when you are choosing a job or when you are interviewing, you are not just hoping they pick you. You have to pick your manager because your manager is the number one barrier to your success or not success at a company and in your career. And I was so lucky with my first manager, Amy Saloom. Hello, I love you so much. And her manager, Conroy Boxhill, they spent so much time with me and growing me in those early days at my first agency job. They spent hours with me just chatting. How did we get that client? How did we work through that crisis? How did you handle when we really disappointed the CEO in this media plan execution? And the amount that I got to learn by osmosis and directly from their time investment, which is never guaranteed, was the starting point of like a rocket ship of a career. And I am so grateful to them for that. I never could have known that that was important. But since I got that the first time, I always made sure I was also interviewing for the manager, not just for the job.
I heard an expression one time, which was find yourself a manager who will speak your name in a room full of opportunities. And that was an epiphany for me early on before I even started my company, because
I literally just gave me chills. And like, you know, my previous boss at Bumble, Lidiane Jones, is the epitome of that person. And not just for you as a worker, but she also was just such an exemplary figure of a working mother, which Becca, yeah, I know that you will appreciate as well. Like, she had these non-negotiables as a working mom that trickled down, and in a company like Bumble, where you have so many women working there, was so important. You know, non-negotiables. She never missed a birthday. So no work travel on her children's birthdays. She never missed the first or last day of school, and she always had dinner with her family, which made it a little hard to schedule APAC calls. I digress, but we had to work around that because those were her non-negotiables in order for her to be the successful executive and be a mom there for her children. And you know what? Now I have non-negotiables, and now my team has non-negotiables. And even though they're not senior as she is, because she like stood that ground and made that like a norm within the company, now people feel like I can set my Slack message to time with family. Yeah, call totally. It urgent. No one ever calls. They don't call. They just know not to expect a response from you right away. And it's brilliant and it's tiny. And it's these little micro things that we can do for people to give that great example as a leader for a team. And Perry, you as the agency leader, I hope you do the same thing. And I have no doubt that you do, because you have a no asshole client rule. And I'm sure that that's the same as that you are also a no asshole boss rule, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, there's never been one time since I started this company almost 5 years now during the pandemic that I've never emailed or Slacked anyone on a weekend night at night ever. Not once. Mm-hmm. It can wait until Monday.
That's shocking to me, I have to say, but that's because I am.
Yeah. Not one.
Hats off to you for that. That was one, you know, thing that I got from Amy, speaking of her again, back in the day, was like, if it can wait till tomorrow, it can wait till tomorrow. There will always be something else that you could do tonight, but if it can wait till tomorrow, it can wait till tomorrow.
Well, the problem is, and if you can Slack somebody on a Friday night or Saturday night and say, don't look at this until Monday. Well, guess what? They're already looking at it and they're thinking about it all goddamn weekend until Monday. So, right? It's like saying like, hey, do you have 15 minutes? People are like, oh my God, what is this call going to be about? Yeah. Until that 15 minutes happens, people are like deer in headlights.
Well, trigger the anxiety attack. For sure. Yeah,
I can't commit to never, ever doing it in the future, but so far I have not had to do it. And I hope that I never do.
It tells me you don't have a lot of crises at work, which is very nice for you.
You know, I have to say, we are fairly fortunate. We are not crisis free, but we don't have these all encompassing crises that I've had in the bigger agency life.
I was going to say, I had at least two jobs that I basically worked all weekend, every weekend, because there was never not a crisis. It was just constant crisis all the time. And man, that'll grind you to death.
Becca, I have to ask, like, how did you do that? Because working all weekend, I'm trying to think if someone in Off the Record told me that, like, I don't know what I would say to them other than like, get another job. That's
what happened. I would say I'm probably a lot like you as a leader, and I advocate for people to have pretty strong boundaries in you call them non-negotiables, but whatever they are, like, you should be allowed to have boundaries. No is an acceptable answer to things, right? Obviously you need to learn, like, diplomacy. Where no is good and where no is bad.
To say no. You have to earn the right to say no sometimes.
I don't even remember what I was going to talk about. What were we just talking about?
This is like working all weekend. How did you do
Working all weekend, right. So in this one job that I'm thinking of, I had a pretty large team. And part of the reason why I worked all weekend was to shield them from having to work all weekend. And that was the job that I learned that being a manager is 90% emotional labor, right? Like, that is such a huge piece of what my job was. And in that job is when I really realized that, like, to your point, my job is to focus on the team and see what I can do to help them do their jobs, grow in their careers, blah, 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 blah. And then my goal was to change things so that we could get rid of the constant weekend grind. But when you work somewhere where there's constant crises, you don't.
Can I say something on this? Because this is something that I've been like noodling in my head, and you bring it up by like, my working all weekend was to like shield everyone else. So we're seeing like these headlines about people that are eliminating this like manager class of people, which, like, again, another reason for Off the Record, because you're going to have even less time with the boss to help you. But like, okay, my husband's in sales. He has a sales manager. His sales manager doesn't also have a quota. His sales manager's number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 job is to build up his sales team, manage the people, and help them through getting the deals. Yep. But in comms, we don't do that. So you have a full-time job, and then you also have the full-time job of managing the people. Right. who also have their full-time job and then their full-time job of managing people.
Yep.
And like, that's just the, I don't know the solution to that. It's not like we're going to get more people because we have to like prove that AI can.
No, we get less people.
Yeah. Well, Perry's replacing his children and mother with AI, which Brill, by the way, very genius. They're, I need a more sycophantic, you know, parents in my life.
Grandma ran away. She had to run away.
Anyway, so it's just that emotional labor. I remember when I first became a people manager and then COVID happened. I mean, I just remember just crying at the end of the day because it was just 12 straight hours of being a therapist.
Yeah.
And then having my job to do after yeah. that too. And we don't talk about that enough. So thank you, Becca, for like talking about that and bringing that up. And just kind of another reason of wanting to build this community is like, you're not alone. Like these are real big things you're dealing with. Honestly, I don't even think it's unique to comms. It's definitely not unique to sales. And maybe the sales managers of my life will email me and say, actually, we have a ton of emotional labor too. And I'm sure that that's the case, but you don't also have a quota.
Yeah.
So you don't also have this whole job.
It's not your, like, that's the thing is like the management of the team and the helping the team and all of that shouldn't be the afterthought when you have extra time, which in comms, you don't have extra time. That should be part of the job description and should be rewarded for you to spend the time. And it's not just like your weekly one-on-ones, which frankly, I think we should probably abolish one-on-ones and figure out a more, productive way to have mentorship or build in, I guess, the leadership team pieces. And I think, you know, large companies do it better, but you know, I've mostly worked at small scrappy places where it is literally just like you learn by doing. And, I was knocked off my feet by the emotional labor aspect. No one had prepared me for that, I guess. And I'm an empath anyway. So yeah.
And no one rewards you for it. I remember I said this one time and then someone repeated it back to me. So it like stuck was like, I never got promoted for the fact that I had no attrition. Like no one ever left my team.
Yes.
My team was happy and no one ever, like, I never got a bonus for that.
I always use that as a data point too. I'm like, no one's ever quit my teams. Like, oh my God, like why? I don't get anything. I don't get anything for that. Like you reward people, like you said, sales gets rewarded for things like that, but we don't in comms. To your point though, you know what you get from that is you get people that at your next job you can go and hire because they want to work.
That is true. You are a magnet. You take them with you to and fro.
I mean, I yes, that, and that is not nothing. Like I think part of the reason I've been so successful was because I had like a bench of amazing people to call on. At a future job. Yeah. And they're like, yes.
Also, like so important and like delineates like good bosses from not great bosses.
Yeah.
I don't want to say bad bosses, but we've all had a bad boss too. Is like my value is not that I'm good. It's that my team is good.
Team is good. Mm-hmm. I know. That's why I can't. Sorry, go ahead.
No, if they can't stand in front of leadership and be excellent and I have to like jump in or take credit for their work. Ew, Vom, never going to do that. Like my value is in them. And sometimes some CEOs and executive leaderships don't see that. And they say, well, what are you doing if your team is doing all of this? Yeah. Like, no. Again, finding a great boss. Like you need to find an exec leadership team who sees the value of your team rising and being able to do so much. Because like, what if I get hit by a boss? What if I want a bus? What if I want to leave? Like,
they don't see the value you bring in terms of building that team until they see you in action at another table. And that's really the fact. And to your point, you don't get rewarded for building a team that never leaves you. Well, guess what? Eventually you're going to leave and they see you kicking ass somewhere else. And they're like, ah, I could have stopped that. I could have rewarded that, but it's a little too little, a little too late. So I want to ask you a question about the community here again. So PR comms, I think, is a little unique in the sense that, especially during COVID and since, everyone is a bit of an island and they don't have that mentorship and they don't have that osmosis and they don't have those water cooler conversations or those swivel chair moments. Is part of this community almost like therapy for the people who need it? Like, and I don't mean that in a trite sort of throwaway line way. Like, it kind of feels like that is a piece of this, is people need to almost commiserate with other people about the multi-headed hydra of a challenge that's coming at us right now in terms of shrinking media, AI, you know, outlandish expectations, like all of that. Are you viewing it through that lens at all? Or is that me putting onto your community something that doesn't exist?
I want it to be what the members need it to be. And yeah. I think that the part, it's interesting, yes, to answer your question very simply. But like a lot of my time right now is spent planning these monthly workshops or masterclasses and building out the template library. And, you know, there's a lot of time intensity in making all of those plans. But I think that actually 6 months from now, when I survey the members and they say, what's going to be the most valuable part of it? It's going to be each other. It's not going to be me. It's going to be connecting with the other like-minded people, finding that commisery support, that it's not just me type of, you know, moments within that like literal community, the literal like technology that connects the people together, that allows them to chat, message, call, come together. And I can only bring the people to the table. They're the ones who are going to make it great. And that's why this is like an organism that's going to be oxygenated and created better by the types of people that it attracts, which, you know, Perry and Becca, I think you guys have paved the way for people like me to be like this. I am just being 100% authentically myself. Like, I want to attract the type of membership who vibes with what I have to give, because like, I don't want to code switch. I don't want to filter. I just want to 100% like do and be me. And I think that's going to attract people like you both and like me and, you know, these, this rising kind of cohort of comms leaders, soon to be leaders, about to be leaders, want to be leaders, et cetera. And they're going to get a lot out of each other for that. So just like, if you guys are hearing this and you like Perry and you like Becca and you like what you hear from me, like there's a lot of us here. And like, hopefully we can come together in a place like Off the Record or, you know, other communities that exist in comms and you can get that support. Perry, I'll never forget, multi-headed Hydra. Yes.
I think also, and I've been talking a lot about this lately, and I actually think I just wrote a post about it, but I write posts in the middle of the night and then don't remember it. Community is the vehicle for everything now, right now. Like everybody is, I'm not a joiner. I mean, I look like I'm a joiner because I do a lot of stuff, but like, you know, if somebody's like, hey, do you want to join the pickleball league? I'm a hard no on that, just because I don't like having things like that to schedule in addition to all of my other things. But I found in the past 2 years, like I am joining a ton of communities and I am active in them. And that is like not me usually. And the reason why is because like we need that right now. And when I need a agency, I'm going to go ask my community first before I go out, or I need to hire somebody, which right now I am hiring. Guess who I'm asking first? Everybody in my communities behind closed doors, because that is Off the Record. That's the safe space. Those are the people that I know and trust, that have been curated, that, you know, if I need a specific thing, it's for this community. If I need something else, it's that community. And I know exactly the place to go for the thing that I need. And it's not just one. I don't just have the one community, right? Like I have a cybersecurity marketing community. I have a VC marketing community. I have a just general CMO. And like those things really matter. And to your point, having the one that is for communications people who are looking for community, there's a thing, there's an appetite there. Yeah. I know.
Yeah. And we're all seeing like the rise of the group chat,
yeah,
you know, as like being the trusted source of information. Yeah. You know, Becca and Perry, you probably have this too, but like the parents of the kids my daughter is in school with is probably my favorite group chat. Like you need a landscaper, or you need, you know, a donation, or you need support on something, like that is the place people go. And it is such a lovely space and place. And we've had that in our personal lives for a long time. And now that we've lost the work bestie, we've lost that person we go to lunch with. We don't like walk to coffee down the street with people anymore because we're not in the office. We gotta build it and work. And it's so great to hear that you're a part of a lot. And like, kind of to that point, you said you have the VC one, you have the marketing one, like there's space for a lot of these places in comms too.
And appetite for it. Like, yes, it's not like it's too saturated right now. Like if people say that, right? Like there's a community for everything and and it's like, I don't know. I have a need for things that don't exist yet. So there's white space there.
And you got to find the one that fits with what you are looking for. And there are like some communities that are,
right?
For your vibe. exactly.
Your vibe. And I mean, sorry I interrupted you, but like that was what you said earlier, is like you don't need to be everything to everyone, because there's a different comms community who's going to be the like buttoned up, whatever, boring one. So you
To that point, I wrote a LinkedIn post a few days ago, like almost every topic I've written a post on. So I can always like, oh, I wrote a post about that. But I wrote a post about how people might be surprised to learn that I've never been a part of like PR associations. I don't subscribe to PR Week. Like I don't do all the sort of like corporate-y stuff, which is not a knock on it. It's just never been my safe space. And I've always kind of been outside of those lines. And I guess what I'm saying about this group that you're making is it seems a little bit more about like my kind of jam, where I don't want the stuffiness of everybody looking at name placards and trying to schmooze and like work their way up a ladder. I want to just have real, to your point, authentic and just honest conversations about, let's face it, the plight that many of us feel we're in at this moment in time. And I think that's a refreshing thing that the corporate stuff can't really offer you.
And Perry, to your point on that, I read that post and I was like, yeah, me too. Yeah. Because like, it's funny, like I could show you the screenshot text messages of reaching out to mentors and previous bosses and chief communications officers being like, I'm struggling. I don't know what to do next. I'm not sure. Like I'm the head of comms at this company. I like a lot of pressure is on me. There's a multi-headed hydra of crisis pillowing on me every single day. Like, where do I go? Who do I turn to? And no one has a response.
Nope.
And so it's like, I built this because I needed it. I needed a place in a space where I could go, where I could be vulnerable, where I could ask, like, I don't even want to say dumb questions, but be like, yeah, I may have been VP of communications at Bumble, but that doesn't mean I wasn't Googling like what to do now, right? Like, yeah, like things just got, even when I was at Bumble, you know, at a certain point, you know, the CMO was on maternity leave. I took over influencer, social, celebrity, brand activations, and like physical, you know, pop-ups like at the US Open. And I was like,
Can I say something though, to that point, what you just said, and I feel this way about AI right now. Like you and I were both heads of comms at companies, right? We are the first heads of comms ever to exist in the landscape that we live in right now. So literally no one has ever done this job. And I feel like we need to remind ourselves of that, because like we're looking around for help, but like we are the people who are the experts at this, because nobody has ever had this job before.
So the experts don't know. You're building the plane as you fly it.
Nobody knows shit about AI. The people who are the experts are just the ones who are talking about how they're using it, right? I mean, there are some people who are experts by trade and whatever. But like the marketing leaders who I see who are, you know, doing keynotes about AI, they're not an expert at AI. They're just sharing how they're using it because they are using it. And I feel like that's how we need to look at what our jobs are now, is like, we're the ones paving the path. And what you're doing is so awesome, because you are saying, I just walked this road and now I'm going to help you all as you're walking your road, because these are the pain points that I saw. But like nobody has been in this job.
And to your point, like, because no one has been in it, doesn't mean that I am the foremost authority on AI and comms. There's a good chance that there's some assistant account executive, you know, at an agency who's using it far better than all of us. Like, let's raise up their voice. Let's, in a community like Off the Record, can help them do that. Sure. I'm going to learn more, far more.
That's the other thing. When you're a senior leader, like you don't have as many opportunities to learn. And like, I actually get frustrated sometimes because, you know, I want a team that will push back and challenge and whatever, because otherwise it's just me up there alone, like telling people to do things. I'm not learning anything anymore. If that's the case, I'm just sitting on my throne barking orders, and like, what's fun in that, you know?
Absolutely. And I'm talking about this in my free masterclass that I'm doing, which is on like growing as a comms leader and like kind of the secrets that I've learned along the way. And pushing back on your leader is such a scary thing to do, but I promise you, it is the most brilliant move that you can make, because just because they're in charge doesn't mean they can see everything you can from your seat. That's why you're there. That's why you're in that seat. And like, one of the best direct reports I've ever had in my life, speaking of one-on-ones, Becca, she did a good job at one-on-ones. Like, she used them as debate opportunities where I would be like, hey, like, you don't need to spend as much time on that. Like, I know you're overwhelmed. Let's look over here. And she'd be like, but here's all these things you haven't thought about before. I learned so much from her, and I attribute so much of my success from learning from her, even though I was her boss. There's no ego here. We're all just trying to be better. And I definitely, you know, spoke her name in rooms of opportunity, no doubt.
Like I said, I'm hiring right now. And one of my main like bullets is like, I need somebody who's going to be a thought partner to me, who's actually going to like bring ideas and share with me or say, no, that's stupid. Let's not do that because X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, have an opinion, damn it.
Yes. Same thing with my world. I've always said, and you guys, I'm sure, would agree that the client isn't always right. And in fact, if they are, why would they need you? Like, what is the point of that? And thought partner is a great way to say that. We're on equal footing here. I'm not looking to be anyone's vendor. I'm looking to be your partner. And the moment that trust is broken, I think we don't have much left, right?
Yeah. You hire someone to be an expert at something, right? Like that's the point. Like they bring expertise. So yeah. I don't know. It drives me nuts.
And also, I want to talk a little bit about the AI world again, because I think there's a confluence of two things that are uniquely interesting as it relates to your community, Gab, which is, so I've recently been on the bandwagon about AI, talking about how it's actually an opportunity in this like world of horror that we have, because large language models actually prioritize earned media over paid and over owned. And they prioritize also communities. So the community piece is actually interesting for people. And I think we're seeing more and more people gravitate toward communities just organically, but it's going to ultimately help with their personal brand and elevate their company brand. But AI might just be an opportunity for those of us who are, you know, feeling chagrin about the lack of opportunity. If we look at it through the lens of earned media and community, and those two things together can be really, really, really powerful. And I'm just wondering, to what extent have you thought about the AI piece as it relates to your community? Is there like a track, or is there like sort of like a wing of your community where you're going to be focusing on that issue, or is it still too new to say?
So interestingly, yesterday I heard a panel where they said something like, there's no such thing as a tech reporter anymore. And there's only AI reporters. And now it's almost like so much that it's all AI that now they're just back to becoming tech reporters again.
Yeah.
And so I kind of think about that way. It's like there's nothing that's not AI right now. But Perry, now you've given me some ideas, because I had ideas like my initial vision was that when you joined Off the Record, you would get access to all these custom GPTs that would help like you easily build a briefing book or something. And I had to like, I had too many things and I had to like trim them down and like focus on what I could launch, and I could always launch other things later. But I never thought about actually using the actual community as a learning data source for owned kind of off the record AI bot that you could talk to in the same way that like ChatGPT pulls from Reddit to give you responses. So thanks for the business idea. Appreciate that.
I have an idea for you also, by the way.
Sure.
Why don't you have a place where people in the community can share GPTs? So you guys can build them for each other and share them with each other, like a GPT library repository that are like comms focused. Obviously you'll have the ones you provide, but then make it a peer sharing situation.
Yes. And that is the strategy I had for the template library. So I have a couple that will be ready and I'm going to do a new drop every month, like a kit, like, you know, an internal comms kit that has like, you know, top to bottom, like start the template. But what I really think is going to be valuable is the community contributions to the template library. And now we're going to open up to GPTs as well, or at least prompts or something that people can use so they can just like speed up their work and have more time doing the things that they actually love to do, either in their job or in their personal life.
One thing that you might want to consider if you haven't already, and you may have, do you know Dave Gerhart and his Exit 5 community? It's for marketing.
I don't.
It's for B2B marketers specifically. And it's as heavy on SaaS specifically. But one of the things that he has done all along, I've always thought was really super brilliant, was say to the people that would potentially join his community, he's like, and by the way, just tell your job that you're joining a community for B2B and you can expense it. Meaning, just go to your employer and they'll
Education.
Get you in that community with their blessing, pay for it. So it's on them. And it's a learning experience, which it is. And it's kind of a win-win for everyone, including
pay for
you.
Conferences.
It absolutely falls within learning and development budgets. I have a template that people can download to send to their boss to get them to pay for it. And, you know, actually like that kind of brings me to pricing, which like was the most challenging part. And at least to get started, like you just got to start somewhere and then you can evolve as time goes. Perry, I'm sure you've discovered this in your agency fee structure as well. But like, I wanted it to be a number that could easily be covered by an L&D budget, but also like that wouldn't be too painful out of pocket if someone wanted to pay for or needed to pay for it. And then as I was thinking and reflecting and Becca reading like a lot of your content about how still the job market is really hard for a lot of people, I'm also going to do something called like a job loss protection. So like if you lose your job for any reason, no questions asked, your next 3 months are free. Like, I'm just going to cover it because you shouldn't have to lose your community when you've also lost your job. And there's a good chance your job paid for this. And now you don't have an income. And now, you know, so I
Sorry to interrupt. What about for people who don't have jobs who want to join? Like, do you
Let's do it. Let's give them their first 3 months.
Yeah, there you go.
No questions asked. And it's like, because again, you know, it's communities are great from the people that are inside them. And I want to, you know, there's not a lot that I will take from the Facebook model, but what I will take is that there's so much value in getting people bought in on the idea and then sort of figuring out like the monetization strategy later.
The people who are most motivated to join communities are the people who are looking for jobs. Do you know what I mean? So like, also if that is like, that's a good pipeline for you. Come have your first 3 months for free. Once you get a job, get your work to pay for it. You're in now. Like, plus they can network with each other, help find future employers. Talk about
testimonial gold. I mean, they're in your community getting jobs.
It's great. Boom. I know. I love it. I want to come visit your community sometime. So please.
Please do. Can like, yes, you will both.
Can I get like a free pass to come visit?
Oh, absolutely. And we do a workshop, a masterclass, a training, or just like a Becca Love session. Maybe we'll talk about LinkedIning, not being cobbler's children, whatever it is. And Perry, I know I, that's actually how I originally reached out about this is I was like, will you come do a workshop with us? I have all these ideas. Also the podcast is great. Can I come on it? And you're like, yes. So I appreciate that. Like,
hell to the yeah. Get out here.
Hell to the yeah. This is a perfect segue because I'm going to move to our creepy end questions. No, they're not creepy.
Only one creepy question. All right.
Only one of them, one or two of them is a little creepy, but in a good way.
Oh God.
Rapid fire, as we like to call them, not creepy questions, although I guess we could rebrand them as such. So are you ready?
Let's go.
Okay. What is a myth or misconception about communications that drives you crazy?
I know you asked this one a lot and I should have been more prepared because like a hilarious thing that's happened to me in this, and I'm not answering the question yet. I know it's called rapid fire, but here I go with a long answer. Yeah. I haven't been doing like the level of prep that I make my executives.
Never. We waste that energy on our executives for sure.
Yeah. I think anything that expects a level of measurement similar to marketing absolutely drives me crazy. I am though on a mission to master public relations metrics. And Perry, I'm sure you have to do this from an agency all the time. I would love to give off the record people like some sort of, this is how you do it. Because I think we as an industry talk about like measuring is so hard, but like people aren't exactly like telling me how to do it instead. So I think clear, defined measurement from like the work that we do to drive sales, that doesn't exist. And that drives me crazy.
I know this is rapid fire and I'm going to take this a little bit far afield, but the interesting thing that I have found throughout my career is we have made dashboards. We have come up with proprietary, you know, algorithms. We have hooked up to your back end to measure, you know, who's coming to your website from where. We've done so many, so many things. And what I've really found, and this is just true, that as long as you have a checkbox, you could cover this, the executive's like, you got the measurement. Sweet. But they never want to look at it again. They really don't want to see it that much. They just want to maybe have it, can do it, and they can put it in a board presentation at the end of
that
the quarter.
That is the truth.
But they don't actually want to look at it, dig through it, parse it. They just want to know you got it.
They don't even care about the data that means anything. They just want to see numbers. Yeah, like, oh, exactly. Okay, you have data that shows something. Totally.
Can you make a friggin' pie chart that'll impress the board? Yes or no?
If the answer dashboard is yes, me. Yeah.
That's true. All right, let's move on.
I'm with you. I love that, though. I always tell people like, it's always very bespoke. Like it depends on your goals, right? So if you can create some sort of a menu of like, here are the kinds of things you can measure, here's how to do it and pick and choose what works for your company. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. I think bespoke is the right thing. Like I remember one product launch we did at Bumble where like my number one measure of success was that there wasn't a misconception about the product, that they like got that single message right. Yeah. And so I was like 87% of the articles got this message right. And like, that was my thing. I don't know if that's like what the executives cared as much about, but like I was head of comm. So I was supposed to like define what success was. And thankfully I worked with a leadership team that allowed me to do that.
And I have, we have a client right now that wants to talk to us about ad value equivalency. I'm not kidding.
No.
I'm not kidding. It's happening right now. All right, move on.
Okay. You get to erase one corporate buzzword from existence. What is it?
Okay. I actually did think about this one. And it's kind of an old one, but it's the word operationalize. It was one that we used in my enterprise SaaS startup days so much. And we also pretended we were a UK-based company for like half a minute there. And so we would spell operationalize with an S instead of a Z. And I hate it and I want it to disappear altogether. And then I think everyone says, you know, like the thrilled and excited. You know, it's so funny. I also am like, good morning to everyone, except for those who say thrilled and excited in press releases. But when I was like launching off the record, I am so excited.
I'm like, excited. I am enthralled.
So it's like, it's so funny that like, I can be like, duh, 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 you know, about all these things. But when it comes to me, I'm like, I'm just super excited.
100%. I always say like, I would fire myself if I was my own like PR / whatever person, just because like, I don't use any strategy for my own stuff. I leave all that on at work, I guess.
Yeah, if you represent yourself in court, you have a fool for a client is what
there you go. Exactly. Okay. You're about to give a presentation in front of 50,000 people. What is your walkout song?
Ooh, am I allowed to say Kendrick Lamar, Not Like Us?
Yeah.
Okay, that song, like I have been just so deep since before the Super Bowl in halftime Kendrick performance, Lamar. But since the Super Bowl halftime performance, especially, like I am in many deep Reddit threads, YouTube, rabbit holes, I am here for it. So, and it has to be the explicit version, obviously.
Love it. Best answer yet, in my humble opinion.
I'm really into Peekaboo right now from Kendrick. Well, I wouldn't even say right now, for like the last like 6 months, because it's like a dopamine song for me. It's great. So if you guys haven't listened to that, highly recommend if you need a little energy boost.
Love.
Okay. If you had to do a TED Talk about anything but communications, what would it be?
Personal finance. So little tweaks and strategies you can make to start getting in control of your money and spending.
Wow. That's so comms good. Expert and personal finance expert.
Yeah, those two things don't usually stick together all that much. Math and comms.
I shouldn't have been in comms. So like, it's funny, like I AP tested out of math and science in college. I should have gone into math and science, and I like didn't do as well on like the English kind of part of things, but like, I don't know if I'm a masochist or something, but like, that's what I went into. I was like, ooh, this is hard for me. Like, let me work on that. I love numbers, but, if anyone wants my first personal finance tip, it's very easy. It's save at the beginning of your paycheck, not at the end. Whatever lands into your debit or your like checking account, that's the money you can spend because you've already saved on the front end.
So I have to ask you this. I know we're trying to do rapid fire here, but these are so interesting. Your answers are interesting. So in your community, is there a path or a lane to talk about the personal finance piece? I think that would be goddamn fabulous.
Yeah, I'm actually have it like set up as one of the workshops this fall. Yeah, because like, again, like, it's so funny. It's like, I just kind of want to do whatever I want to do right now. And I love talking about personal finance. So we're going to do a session on it. We'll probably mix it in with like productivity hacks, like little things like, here's one. So I'm 100% always on do not disturb, 100% of the time. But there are certain people that can interrupt my do not disturb. And those people change. So right now, my baby is with a babysitter. She's a pass through on my do not disturb, but she's not going to be on it over the weekend when he's not with her. So like little things like that, it's not just about comms. Again, I feel like this community could kind of be for anybody, but I'm obviously focused on comms. But yeah, we'll do personal finance. We'll do productivity. We'll do non-comms things because it's what I feel like talking about.
Love it. That's kind of what this show is kind of like that. We'll talk about comms. We'll go way over here and way over there because we can.
And I love how you guys are like new episodes whenever we feel like it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, like work doesn't stop when you leave work, right? Especially comms people. Like we're just, you know, it's all intertwined. So you have to be able to talk about all the things with your community. Anyway. Okay. You get to use one emoji for the rest of your life. Which one?
It's like this hands one. Like, ah. Mm-hmm.
Jazz hands.
You know, like with the like floats on top of the hands,
like the double high five. Psh.
Yeah, I don't see it as a double high five. That's so weird. I see it as almost like a bow down, like, you know, like hand raised, like you are.
Really? I always just thought it was like a double, like, psh, woo.
You know what's so funny, Perry, is like Slack did these global surveys on emoji usage and how different countries interpret emojis in different ways. And now I'm realizing like I maybe have been doing my favorite emoji wrong.
Maybe we need to like do a poll on this. This is fascinating.
Yeah.
Do you think it's like Jesus take the wheel kind of thing?
I mean, and maybe a lot of people think that most of the time I'm telling Jesus to take the wheel when I'm just going like, girl, you got it. Like, you are amazing. Hail, bow down. Wow. This is enlightening.
Oh my God.
That's
hilarious.
Perry gets to take the wheel now, speaking of taking the wheel. Go ahead.
Things get real serious now. So if you've listened to the podcast, you may have heard this question, and it has to do with hiccups and pinkies. Here's a choice. You must either have hiccups for 3 months straight, uninterrupted. You can't medicate them away. You can't do anything. You must sleep with hiccups. You must speak with hiccups. You'd be on this podcast with hiccups around the clock for 3 months. 3 months. That's a long time. Or you can get rid of that problem immediately by severing your pinky. What do you choose and why?
I know you are team hiccups, Perry. It's so weird because you talk like for your job and you have children and you have a wife and you would just be hiccuping the whole time.
He's gonna come and I know
you're really attached to your pinkies, but like frankly, they're kind of useless. So like I know.
I would have bet a lot of money, Gab, that you would have said, I'm keeping my pinky. You're gonna cut your pinky off.
This is such a painful question. Did you invent this one? Like, this is like a weird torture chamber because I am
your wife invented. Somebody invented it in Perry's family.
I think I either heard it or we invented it in my family sometime a while ago, but I just.
It's great dinner table conversation. You know, my sister told me that like, so she was like a really baddie in high school and is now like much better. And she says that sometimes she's driving and she looks at her pinkies. This is maybe TMI, but she like wants to cut them off for how much she tortured my mom when she was in high school. And so like, that's all I'm thinking about is my sister driving her car, looking at her pinkies and being like, I gave them up for hiccups.
Wait, your sister going like this?
Now you have to change your hand emojis.
Wait, okay. So here's what we're gonna do.
Perry, it's all coming
get rid
together.
Of my pinkies, and then I'll change my favorite emoji.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for anyone not watching the YouTube video.
I know.
You're just holding up
the video. I mean, you really need the video for this.
Go back and go on YouTube and just scroll to the end.
You not just listen to this one. You must see. You must see. This is must watch.
Any other like painful questions you guys have for me?
Well, we have the shark one. Should we do the shark one?
We can do the shark one.
We have like a minute left. Go ahead and shark us up.
So it gets pretty morbid at the end of the show, apparently. all right. You can have $100 million given to you today to use as you freely choose. Give it away, build a trust, do whatever you want. Go on vacation, do whatever the hell you want. $100 million. However, if you accept the money, the day you turn 90, you will, no matter what you do to avoid it, be devoured by a shark until you're dead.
1,100% I am taking this money. I have like, this is like a piece of advice that I give to all the people. Because like us as comms people, we become so like, I'm going to bring it back to comms, like a good comms person here. Mm-hmm. We feel just like so much attachment to our jobs and our companies because we are the protector of the brand. And I have to remind them, and sorry, Perry, I know you like own an agency too, but so I'm sorry that I'm going to say this, but like all we are to our jobs is a contractual agreement where we give them our brain and many hours a week. And they put money into our Wells Fargo account every other week. Like that's it. That's the contract. That's the agreement. So now what you're saying with this $100,000 is like you eliminate this need for me to have this contractual agreement with the company. And now I have the freedom to do whatever I want, which by the way, would probably be starting off the record. So this is why this is a very exciting time for me. The one problem though, 90 is nice, but I actually think we're about to like live a lot longer than that. Mm-hmm. But there's no guarantee that I'm not going to get eaten by a shark anyway. So I guess I'll take 100 million.
Die before 90. Like I'm worried I'm going to die every day.
You have to live until that point. All right, I'm going to change this parameter. 85 years old. That's the time you're going to get eaten by a shark.
Yeah, I guess like at the same time, I understand like how much AI is going to make living at 85 awesome or not awesome.
You're going to be perfectly healthy at 85. Perfectly healthy. Grandkids, whatever.
Like, perfectly healthy. All the rules.
I'm still taking the $100 million. Because actually I think that knowing that I'm going to die at a certain day is a very cool way to live. Because you can like do so much and like set so much up, and like, I will meet my grandkids. I may even meet great grandkids by then. And like, and then it's like, they're getting to live their best life. They're like AI future world where all they do is like, I don't know, arts and crafts all day. I don't know what we'll do in the robots.
They have $100 million from grandma.
Well, and more because I'm a personal finance girly, so you know, I'm going to grow it. So
the lie that I'd like to think most of us tell ourselves is that we're going to live forever. And the reality of actually dying, especially on a specific date by a specific animal with a ton of teeth, sounds terrible.
I think it happened quickly. Like, you'd bleed out pretty quick. So it's like, it'll be over.
Also, if you live with an anxiety disorder every day, like, I'm worried about this all the time. Like, I mean, seriously, like, every day of my life, I'm worried I'm going to get eaten by a shark. I'm not even in the ocean. So, like, come on. I'll live my whole life.
You bleed out pretty quick, says Gab. And with that, it's a wrap.
Thank you, Perry and Becca, for having me. This was a great way to spend a morning.
Thank you.
Seriously, this has been so much fun. I am super excited for you and the community, and I will definitely pop in there at some point. Shoot me a little invite or something, and maybe we will do a panel. Maybe we'll get together and do a workshop, something like that.
Maybe we can do like a live podcast where the members ask you all questions.
Yeah.
Ooh, that would actually be pretty fun.
Becca, all right. We'll make it fun. We get to do whatever we want because we're making it up.
Love it. All right. So this is fantastic. Thanks so much. And have a good rest of your day.